Julia, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast. So you've got an exceptionally interesting background. You are currently now the Director of Client Relationships and Design at WMK, but there's been a very interesting story in the background to that, and you also have other businesses as well. So thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story.
That's an absolute pleasure. I'm actually, while you're saying that, I'm fast tracking in my mind going, how do we condense this so it's not like a 20-hour discussion piece?
Well, I think
because I haven't had that mainstream pathway.
I think that's one of the interesting things. One, we're never going to get somebody's life story in one little podcast in itself, but probably in highlighting. And I think it is that, you know, not everybody has the same journey. And I look at yours and I think how fascinating and interesting. Mm. So let's start off, because you actually started off as a nurse to start off with.
Yeah, I definitely was a nurse for only a short period. Like, I mean, life is only so long. I'd love to say I nursed for 20 years, but really it was only for about 4 or 5 short years,
yeah.
But did cram in a lot of experience at the time. It was also at the time, if you're a registered nurse out there, you'll be sitting there going, Julie, nothing has changed. And I'm sure it hasn't in terms of pay rates, being so frontline, sore feet, workload, all those, and shortage, you know, skill shortages. It certainly was like that many years ago. So the good, bad, and the ugly, I don't know, I had it all, but I never felt, and maybe it's because I didn't stay in the profession long enough. I loved every single minute of it. I loved the opportunities that it gave me in that, because if you take a negative and turn it into a positive, because there was such a staff shortage, you're fast tracked so quickly, and you've got to keep up, you know. And I'm someone who gravitates towards a fast pace, and my head, it's not necessarily saying that I'm super smart, but my head is very much like a sponge. Like, I like to learn as much as I can. I don't want to take years to learn things. And watching and learning and reading people and understanding why and the mechanics. And I think nursing brings some beautiful skills. Like, there's that humanistic side. And such a science to it, and chemistry and bedside manners, and it's all in one. And there are so many specialties to it. Like, it is a wonderful career, and particularly for those, I mean, I never got to the stage to have children whilst nursing, but I know a lot who have the ability to be flexible and still have a career as a nurse is amazing. And I don't think we hear enough about that. We hear the cons of it, like, it is hard work, they should be paid more, conditions should be better. 100% totally agree with that. But there are some, you know, gold nuggets of experience.
Look, there's some amazing people have been nurses and gone on to do other things, and I think it's great. So from that, you then took a very interesting turn into the marketing side, and I kind of understand that. Makes a lot of sense when you talk about being that person who's observing and learning things and taking on, and obviously same sort of skill set that set you up for success in being an interior designer and design on a larger scale. So how did you kind of get into marketing after nursing?
I know. It's funny you say it sort of makes sense, because you're probably one of 2% of that has said it. Most people just go, what? And it makes no sense. And trying to explain that to my parents at the time, they were like, okay, what next sort of thing. I think they were pretty used to the chop and change. And so I'm very careful. Sorry, segueing a little bit. I'm very careful when the next generation or the next generation, when I see their CVs, when there's a bit of jumping around, I'm clearly very careful as how I read those CVs, because I've got a much longer CV, but it has had a lot of change, but there is a story behind it, you know, like, it's never as black and white as it should be. But
and I think that's always important. That's what we always do when we're interviewing people, is understanding what that story is behind that, because everybody has a different journey, and there's different things that happened at circumstances. Because you worked at Qantas for a bit, and then you went on to be the Director of Sales and Marketing APAC for Design Hotels. So tell us a little bit about that company and what that was.
Look, wonderful company, and a company that still exists, or owned now by Marriott. But at the time, it was owned by a set of stakeholders, namely from Germany, and led by Klaus Senlinger, who's probably one of the most phenomenal humans I've ever met and worked with. Certainly aspirational and inspirational, and in a space of hotels that was just saying hello to the industry and was either misunderstood or people were curious about, you know. And I think, and I've said that before to a few people, that the core of marketing for me is to tweak on people's curiosities, you know. If people are curious, they want to know why, and if there's a new kid on the block, that helps too. And certainly Design Hotels at the time was a new kid on the block, you know, representation of a portfolio of small unique boutique hotels. Yeah. And boutique meaning it could have been 5 rooms up to 150. The briefs have changed quite a bit now because the landscape of hotels have changed quite a lot. But they were very special, and for the most part they were owned by people who weren't necessarily hoteliers. So talk about career changes. They were either architects, fashion designers, business people who owned FMCG businesses but weren't hoteliers. Yeah. But they were fascinated either through their own travels or through their own adventures of having a little something in Mykonos, and it was your hotel and you could be that hotelier and you could be different versus the big brands who had the beautiful staircases and the big ballrooms. Like, it was unique. Sure, you may not have had the restaurant. Sure, you may not have had the buffet breakfast, but
it's
found
a different
that
experience.
Right, yeah,
essentially, it's also a different market that you're actually marketing to, because people who are seeking out independent hotels and boutique hotels are actually looking for a different experience. They're not looking for the mainstream. Okay, I'm working to a Hilton, it's the same. I could be in Sydney at the Hilton. Yeah. I could be in Greece in the Hilton. It's like, and that's that brand, and it's the same experience. Yeah. That, you know, you're going to get this and this and this.
Yeah.
Whereas when we're seeking a unique hotel, you're looking at the different experience, and generally they're refurbished buildings in that case, I'm presuming from my own experiences. You tell me from what you're representing, the refurbished buildings with a history and taking that in. And, I mean, I even know it. I'm based on the Gold Coast, but I'm in Sydney often, and there's a lovely little hotel down on the rocks. And, you know, it's great. You walk in, you look and you go, oh, where's this history? Where does all this fit in? You know, how does this actually – you feel like you're actually more culturally in-tuned with where you are. So I understand that from obviously experience point of view, and it's a different market, and somebody who's looking for an independent hotel is not looking for the standard get in the lift, go up, here's the gym, there's the pool,
that's
there's
right.
the buffet, lunch, breakfast.
And those hoteliers are such a special bunch of people. They are not adverse to risk. They don't have to fall into certain brand guidelines, because the brand is whatever they want it to be. They're interested in whoever stays there. It's a very different take. But at the time, we're talking around, I think it was 99, 2000. It was, I mean, that's a long time ago. I think I've just gave my age away if anyone wants to sit and do the maths. But anyway, and it was a riveting time as well, because it was also around 2000 was the Sydney Olympics.
Exactly.
And it was a hot time, and the small hotels were having a field day. So it was great. But then things changed, and the other extreme was 9/11 came along, and so that impacted that industry quite a bit. And around that time,
and we forget about that, don't we, actually?
Yeah, we do. We do. I was curious about the design world, having been around so many of them in that space. And certainly the being in tune with that commercial side of design led me to walk into that space. But it wasn't so much about hotels at that stage. I was mindful, and it came off the bent of a personal story. My father at the time, who was a lot older than the average dad in my age group, was going through a health problem at that time. And
crisis, yeah.
You know, I don't know how to say this. He was dying. And so we had to find an aged care home for him. And at the time, aged care homes were four people in one room, one bathroom, or one bathroom to eight. You know, it was pretty horrific. White, sterile, smelly, and you wonder why no one would go visit, you know, these people who are your family. And I was horrified because there was quite a few years between when I nursed, and albeit I never nursed in an aged care home, to when we were looking one for him, that this was still the state of affairs, particularly in a nice part of Sydney, in a nice suburb, fairly well to do, that this was how it was. So when I set up the design business, it was twofold. One was I was a new mum, and workplace was very different back then for new mums, like flexible work life. There was no such thing as paternity leave then. So if mum stayed home, dad or your partner would definitely have to go to work. I didn't really have readily available childcare from family as such. So, and part-time work arrangements for the role that I had, which was quite senior, wasn't admitted as frowned upon, but just wasn't easy. You know what I mean? So I thought, okay, well, what the hell? I'll start up my own business, you know, as you do. And so that was to solve that problem. But then also I was curious to how to solve that aged care problem. So I sat there and I thought, I have this practical experience. I have this worldly experience. I, at the time, know a little bit about interior design. How do I mesh all of that together to try and innovate that space? And so came 15 years of Melly Studio, where we reinvented the aged care, healthcare, retirement living space best we could. We were one of the early innovators, certainly in Australia, and have moved into the New Zealand and Asia Pacific market. And have changed the way it's been perceived, you know, the look and feel of a hotel, the sense of arrival of a hotel, but inside it is very residential feeling. It's intergenerational. Food and beverage is important. All of those elements, rather than a sterile, smelly, hospital-looking place, you know.
And it's quite interesting because you also then have another business that you've actually started up outside of the design but interlaced with it, or it sounds related, which is actually on the fabric side of things. Yeah. So, and actually a building for that, which is really interesting.
Yeah. There's such a shortage of and I think it's, I mean, we live in such a beautiful country, beautiful beaches, beautiful vegetation and food and wine and everything. Like, we really have everything, I think, albeit we're at the bottom of the earth. But because we're at the bottom of the earth, we don't have access to a lot of great products. You know, it's either become super expensive to get it here, or it's not of great quality. And Australian manufacturing certainly has had a big hit in the last 20 years. So when a lot of our products that we bring into these aged care homes or healthcare environments, and they need to be extremely fit for purpose and tick quite a few boxes, it limits our product availability so much more. And a lot of that is fabrics, like fabrics on chairs. So you can imagine, like in a hospital, a lot of it is vinyl chairs, like it's cold. It's easy to wash down, all that stuff. And that's okay for a transient type person. But similar to a hotel where you have beautiful fabrication, why couldn't we have had that in these aged care homes? So, and certainly we were not the first innovators in this. I mean, there's some great companies in the US and in Asia and in Europe who have these products. And here we do have some products. But I guess from a design intent point of view, what we try and drum into our young designers is once you design a home or a product to look like that, replicating it into something else, depending on the client, isn't using your best design skills. That you really need to look for new product. But the more times you do that, you run out of good product. So we decided to create our own fabric line. But we're sort of running out of patterns on that one as well. So I need to put my mind to the next collection. But that's pretty
That
much
must
the
be
reason why.
fascinating, especially as a designer. It's great. You're looking from the interior design perspective, but you're also then looking at it down to the materials, because that is what does is how is it made? How does it feel? That's what most designers end up doing. Whereas yes, let me, you know, getting down to the small
Of
details.
course.
But it makes, I mean, material is actually exceptionally important in a room in itself, and particularly if it's not a large space or somebody's not, it's what you're interacting with. And majority of the time, I had a very similar experience with my grandmother as well, and we had the same thing. And it was just, even then, it was nicely done. It's just, it's the design of, and it's not just about picking nice materials, but it's the design and the flow of where are people meeting. How is this space going to be used? How are you actually encouraging people out? Because I think the older we get, we try and avoid interacting. It's always harder to make friends the older you get. And taking that and creating community with space and doing those elements too. And that's what you're doing in workspace design. That's what you're doing in hosts. You're thinking about the experience and how people are moving through. And it's interesting how you've got that health background to be able to sort of look at it in the practicalities and understanding what, you know, a bit like in a hotel, you need to understand if you're building the kitchen, what the back of house needs to look like, because that's as just as important, if not more important to the service, in making sure the functionality works, as well as making sure that experience. So I can understand from a design perspective the similar parts in the design process and philosophy and approach to it.
Oh, for sure. And you know, by no means am I the first designer to think like that. There's a million greater ones than me out there. But I guess it's in this space, it's that intuition that when someone has had such a long lived experience, they shouldn't stop living just because they enter these homes. That living continues, and it should, that, and if for nothing else, it should be aspirational, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, it might be a little bit, I mean, I often wonder how on earth, if I ever move to an aged care home, how I'm going to fit all of my shoes and handbags into a 24 square meter room with one cupboard. Like, I think I'd have to buy the whole floor out. But
it's quite funny. I think I often think about that too. I'm like, because I always think about the work, like the end, and having seen people do that. It's quite funny because I went to boarding school, right? So I actually... I go, oh, well, I'm just going back to boarding school again, right? Like, you know, I'm just going to have a tiny room. Round. I might share it with somebody else half, or it might be like 10 of us in a room and we've got a covered bathroom. I have a feeling my boarding school days might hold me in good stead for, you know, forever
no
I have to go to aged care.
I have no chance. My daughter says to me, you need to start downsizing. I'm not sure how to take that. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. I'll let you know when I need to
downsize.
Is she
telling you to downsize so she can take some of those handbags off you?
Well, fortunately for me, unfortunately for her, we don't have the same shoe size.
I have the same problem. My mother has a beautiful shoe collection, but I have massive feet, and she has these beautiful, elegant size 8 feet. And I'm always like, damn it, I missed out on all of the shoe
Stretch
collections. And so obviously there's a really other interesting thing as well. So you were running your studio for many years, and obviously you know, for 17 years, and built it up and do different things. And then you have strategically actually merged with WMK. So talk us through a little bit about what that, you know, what's the allure or the change, and what that looks like, particularly as, you know, a small to medium sized business, they're merging into a larger national business.
I have to say, and a lot of people have asked me this question in the last few months, or well, it's nearly a year since we made the merge official, or actually made it public, is how has it been expecting it to be one of these really bumpy stories? And I can't say in all honest truth that any part of it has been bumpy. It's been probably the most smooth ride in all of my commercial chapters ever. The hardest part was actually before it, where I was thinking, what do I do with this business that I absolutely love? Am I prepared to walk away from it? I mean, three choices: you close, you sell, or you have a succession plan. Well, the succession plan's out. My children have no interest, and they made that very clear years ago. And that's fine. And then you're left with two choices. And closing was an option that I was pretty comfortable about, but sort of felt, oh, well, that's a shame sort of thing. Like a shame as in for it to end, like, but not a shame in terms of ego or anything like that. But came an opportunity to have a discussion with the two owners of WMK, who we have collaborated with before, so the relationships weren't new. So that was,
you'd already tested it
always. We both knew each other's business really well. We'd worked together, we'd known quite a few of the people in the business, so that little let's get to know you stage had already been done as such, if you want to think of it like that.
I think it's a great story, actually, because I often, we work with companies and doing that and helping them to expand and looking for others that they might merge or acquire, or how that might be. And we often say the best approach is the first JV and partner on some projects, because it's kind of like a marriage, I look at it, right?
Yeah.
You know, as you said, it's been really smooth sailing, probably because you've already worked together, you know each other, you know how each other works, you're respectful and understanding of that, and obviously going into the arrangement, knowing what it is and being clear, like in a marriage, a bit of a prenup, you know, that's a great thing about it.
Yeah, you can walk away easier than getting out of a marriage,
That's exactly right, you know, going through a divorce, as you've been through, it's like, you know, it's the same way, you know. So if you're an interviewer, a senior leader, you kind of got to wind it down. You got to go on a date first before you're going to decide that we're going to get into this and marry each other. And I think that's it's a really great experience in understanding that. But it's also, I suppose, an understanding, you know, you build something for 17 years, as you said. A lot of that may have been instigated by your children and a desire to make a difference as well, but a stage. And, you know, even though it's very interesting, I was talking to the CEO of Narwick in a previous podcast, and she actually said our representation in the industry is actually less than it was back in 20 years ago, which I was like, wow, this is incredible. Really? Yep, I know, it blew my mind. I was like, what? I thought we were getting better, not worse. And we're talking the entire industry, civil, contracting, everything. And on the other side, though, they'd obviously done so many research on why people are leaving, women are leaving the industry. And they said the biggest thing that women are leaving the industry is actually when they have babies.
Yes. Yeah.
And so you hear these stories, and we talk about this from a design perspective too, like how are we losing so many women at, you know, the senior to associate level, this mid-level, and they don't necessarily return to the industry. And a lot of that, I think, comes that people do need to find that flexibility. I know many females in the industry who run successful businesses who did the same as yourself, sort of went, I've had kids, I need to do that. You know, I've got kids too. It was one of the reasons for that flexibility to do it versus, you know, being in a business. But I think there also is another side of that too, where there is actually lots of small businesses out there, and actually going through that journey of running your own business and then obviously becoming part of a larger team as well. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm interested to hear your take on this. One, you've worked together, but two, design is a very collaborative environment. And has that been sort of how you felt from going and running your own thing and doing then having your own team to now essentially entering in and kind of just bolstering, but collaborating in a different way from an internal?
I mean, we've gone from Melly, a team at that time, a team of four, and probably purposely scaled down for that reason in the years leading up to it. So when I think back now, it wasn't being purposeful, but maybe there was some purpose to it that I didn't realize. I don't know. I'm one of those hindsight things. But we went from a team of four to now WMK, a team of 100, with a very strong East Coast presence. And there were a few things on my end that if we were going to entertain this merge and or an M&A with anyone, that what mattered to me. So what mattered to me was that the chemistry was right. So when you talk about a marriage, I mean, all jokes aside, that was really important. Who were in the leadership team? their representation was really important to me. You know, their DEI numbers were really important to me. I couldn't see myself walking into a 1960s vibe. You know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to be
politically you couldn't necessarily walk into it. No. A bunch of blokes and running the show and there wasn't equal representation.
Yeah, that's it. You know, where WMK is about 60-65% women. And I loved that. And given that the two owners are men, I loved that even more, that there was, you know, something. The projects were great, but they also, you know, had a missing portfolio, which is where Melly Studio came into the play. So there was a reason for it. It wasn't just to join hands and sing love songs to each other. You know, there was a commercial strategic partnership.
Absolutely. But you're either growing regions or something to bolster into your strong offering already.
The culture and the people side outweighed so many of the other things. And I guess when you've run your own business, and where I personally always had the mantra, whether this right or wrong or good or bad or whatever, or kind to myself is a different story, but failure was never an option for me. So when these commercial conversations came up, it was like, I don't want this to fail. Like, and I want to still add value, and I don't want them to, you know, 12 months down the track go, wow, gee, that was a dud of a purchase. You know what I mean? I wanted them to feel, gee, that was a great strategic move on our end. Like, how smart were we to acquire Mel? And it has been like, we had those fun conversations where it has worked beautifully for both of us. The contributions have been for both sides. I mean, Melly Studio had to, at this stage with AI and technology, really had to make a capital outlay to be fruitful and viable as a business into that technology piece. And how was I going to do that? Well, this solved a million and one problems. Yeah. I wanted our team to diversify their skills in terms of sectors and industry more. This was a perfect solution for it. And we were a perfect solution for them in so many ways in our niche markets and our portfolios and their missing bits. So it has been a wonderful marriage and certainly a great partnership. And the negotiations, smooth, like certainly no bumps. And I've never had a in hindsight moment. You know, I haven't had any, I don't know about them, but oh my God, she's a little bit crazy. They're probably saying that.
You'll find anybody in design has a little bit of character to them. I don't necessarily find any, you know, everybody's got to have something, as we say, you know, people buy your passion and they buy your energy. Very much in design, it is about being able to walk into the room and do that. I think that's a great segue for us into probably the next topic and area to discuss, which is around challenges, obviously, in the industry and changes. Mm. And I think you've got a really interesting perspective in what you've just mentioned in being a small business, obviously, on the forefront where AI is coming in and may, and the impacts it may. So from your perspective and being a smaller business and now being part of a larger business, what did you see those as, and then the impact, as you mentioned, on being a smaller business and what you saw where that investment really was you needed to make and go?
I mean, if we talk about the AI piece, we, as a practice and as a business, we do use AI. And I speak about it freely, but very firmly in that I want our designers to do what they're gifted in doing, and that is to produce great designs and to use AI as your support.
A tool. You
know, like having like a, yeah, a tool, but it doesn't replace you as the artist, but always use it as a tool, always use it to increase efficiency, use it administratively. But if we wanted to replace you as a person, we wouldn't have hired you for your talents. We would have kept using with AI. There's, and I'm a big believer, and maybe it's a generational thing, where that person and those people skills are really irreplaceable. And certainly AI has its place. But that technology side for Melly would have been a huge investment. And for us now, it's there and we use it to help our clients visualize what we're creating. So the efficiency in moving our projects to the next stage is there. And I think that has certainly add progress to our industry to architecturally and design and moving the pace along. I think that's great. I think the challenges though are more the economic challenges that always has an interplay and a knock-on effect to everything else. But I mean, if you want to be in a safe industry, this isn't one of them. You know, like it just isn't. It's going to bounce around as much as the market bounces. I mean, a few months ago,
we often say design is a canary in the industry as well. Yeah. So just the architecture side as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And trends come and go as well. Briefs change. Budgets change, and you know, all those things that everyone knows about, but it's bouncy. And if you want a stable industry, this isn't one of them. Like it isn't. I mean, you saw it after 9/11, you saw it after the GFC, you know, the recent, what's still going, I think, the impact of the Middle East war, like those, and COVID, I mean, yeah, gosh, how quickly I forgot about COVID.
Well, I think the thing is we all forgot about COVID because we all had a heart attack for about the first 6 months and then suddenly there was more work than we've seen in life. So it was like a tap. Oh, my God, have a heart attack too. Shit, we all can't keep up. This
I know, you can't sit and drink forever, folks. We need to keep working.
I think it's now we're on the, I mean, look, I've said this many times, in essence, economically, we're meant to sort of have a downturn. If you look at the cycles, every sort of 8 to 12 years, COVID, we're being sort of propped up. COVID has been that. So we're seeing that sort of downturn. The governments have spent so much money on obviously keeping that and the infrastructure costs. And then, you know, we're paying so much in interest from a government perspective. But interesting, obviously, in you know, if you're doing a lot in the seniors living and aged care sector, that is a sector that actually was quite affected pre-COVID as well with the Royal Commission and changes. Is that now changing, you're seeing? Because from what I'm hearing, the industry is picking up and there's obviously changes in the approach of what operators are looking for.
Yeah. Look, I think the last, I'll just say 5 years have, certainly in Australia, massive changes and, if for nothing else, massive awareness as to how these homes should be like. And this is the benchmark it should be. And anything below that is unacceptable. And, you know, from our end, we can't control the care side. I mean, that's such an operational and that has its own challenges. But, gee, we can help by thinking of residents when we design. Gee, we can help by thinking about the carers when we design and, you know, the restroom or staff room or whatever you like to call it now needs to be uplifted. It can't be shoved down in the bottom basement where they seek respite. Like it's all of that, again, all of that intuitiveness has come into the forefront. And so again, taking the positives out of what was the negative, and then now just seeing a bit more market confidence in that sector and developments moving a lot faster. I mean, no word of a lie, a few years ago it was a little bit patchy, but now there's certainly more confidence. Then again, it depends who you speak to. But it's the same with hotels. Like hotels massively impacted during COVID. And now you're paying in Sydney, it's not unheard of, $600 to $800 a night for a room. It's years ago it was you were doing pretty well if it was 300 max. Like it's amazing. Yeah. And I think that's great. I mean, it's an incredible representation, those numbers of how the industry is going. So I do think we are climbing, but will it bounce around 100%? It will. I mean, I'm certainly no economist, but I think as designers and being one of the leaders in one of the solid firms in Australia, and who does a myriad of projects everywhere, is that we now have to be more careful of what, or at least aware of what the climate is out there.
Yeah.
As part of knowing what our clients are going through and not
Absolutely.
Just expecting them to increase budgets when we decide to overspend. Like, it's a lot more of that awareness than I'd say probably 20 years ago when we were designing. You could push and shove your way through a little bit, maybe beg a bit on the
side. Well,
I
mean, obviously construction costs to make things, and this is probably leads us on to a really good part where you talk about the skills as well that people really do need to. I think you've touched on two things. One, the people side isn't, projects are not built by robots yet, probably not for the next, you know, I know they're coming along, but I don't think it's, we're not going to see buildings built, especially maybe modular a bit more in a mechanical way, but it's always, you're instructing, and there's always people on a project that are going to be bringing things together. I think we also spoke about before starting the recording, also on what you've sort of seen yourself and through your experience, has always been that interest in that business side of things and the marketing. And I think it's actually really important for designers to understand that at the end of the day, you can't design good projects or do good work if you don't run a good business. You can't do good work for your clients unless it stacks up, because somebody has to pay for it, and they're not going to be operating if it goes over the budget, because it's not going to work into obviously the business models either.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I think, well, not I think, it's something that is drummed into our younger designers all the time, because I feel like it's such an important piece for them to be aware of when they're designing. One is not so much, not, I should be careful saying this, not entirely about the brief, but your awareness of the commercial side for the client, that there are reasons as to why there are cost parameters, and those reasons are A, B, C, X, Y, Z, whatever they are. You know, they tend to be a little bit different depending on who it is. But ultimately, they are engaging us because we are the experts in what we do. So that doesn't necessarily mean you design what they think they should be getting. They are relying on us to be the experts. So don't always fold, you know, like I feel like there's a lot of young designers out there who go into that slight panic of, oh, that person doesn't like it, I need to give them what they actually want. Well, that's not necessarily always the case. Like, it's always about delivery and how you present it. Tell the story behind it, and at the heart of every good design needs to have a story. And that's, and I'm pretty sure I've given people tinnitus over saying that so many times. It's like, yes, okay, Julie, we get it, it's the story, but it's honestly, it's about the story.
Well, it is, and it's like when you go through a designer's folio and you're like, it's great, show me the narrative, show me the, and this is one of those things, you know, we talk about when we're giving tips to people. It's like, you, your presentation skills of how you talk through your folio is the narrative. What you're doing and taking people on that journey, that story, is the same skills that you are doing to a client. What was it? What were the parameters? What were we going through? Yep. What was the narrative? Why did we make this selection? Why have we gone about this approach? If it's linked to something like that, it's very different to, oh yeah, it was a pretty color. And you can always tell the good designers to those. It's not just the design eye, but it's the ability to communicate the design. And as we spoke about before, buying that energy, buying what that is as well.
Yeah. But having that awareness of that business behind it is so important. There is a reason why that there's a budget, that there's a reason why there's a quantity surveyor involved, that there's a reason why there's incremental pricing to each line item. You know, it's because the numbers have to stack up. And if the numbers don't stack up, there won't be a project and we don't get to the end. So it's part of our responsibility to be so aware of that and design to those numbers, and maybe shuffle them around a little bit. And you know, for the business people who are listening to this, and this sounds really harsh, but we don't do this for it to be a hobby. You know, it's okay. It's okay to make a profit. It's okay to make a profit. You know, it's, I'm not sure why some people think it's a dirty word, but it's okay to make a profit. Like, be happy to make a profit.
I always say,
because there'll be no business.
Well, and it's important because you can't do good design unless you run a sustainable business. And you can't run a sustainable business unless you as a business are making money. Otherwise, you can't keep the doors open. And, you know, we do business training for designers on this and understanding the impacts of cash flow, understanding the impacts of tax, understanding how that actually impacts you as you go through. So understanding if you miss that deadline, we're not going to be able to necessarily bill, right? We've let the client down, all of these things. Yeah. That means we've carried your wages for this many months before we're actually going to get paid for it. Actually understanding those aspects and how the business operates is the actual design business operates is important as yes. well. Or if you're working for a design and construct firm, that's a very important, slightly different business model as well. But it's also important to understand how the operations of the business that you're designing for also runs. So whether it's for an asset that needs to be, and we need to make this so it's a certain, so we can charge out certain tenancies to be able to fill out the building, because otherwise the building's not actually stacking up. We can't have the return. It'll have to be sold, and then it'll fall into another class. And then, you know, the on-fall effect I think we see of that is that, you know, things can slowly go down in cities in certain areas. Or if it is for an aged care, there is an actual business unit behind, because the care costs are actually exceptionally high. So being able to make it in the same way, the attraction or who's coming in, what that experience is going to be. So excellent. That has been exceptionally interesting, Julia. You and I could probably talk for another 3 hours as it is. Look, just to finish out on, is there any sort of people you follow, books, podcasts, anything like that that you would recommend that you listen to or enjoy that you think others should know about?
Well, your podcast is okay.
Good to hear. We'll get the rating on that.
Last little plug there. To be honest, I don't think, and this is a terrible fun fact and a hard thing for me to admit, I love reading books. I love reading magazines, and I love the physical thing. I can't remember the last time, however, I finished reading a book, and I don't know why. I have no idea why, but I do love, if broadly speaking, I love reading biographies. I'm a bit of a sticky beak. I like to know about people's lives.
It's interesting, a bit like this. It's about hearing people's different journeys and what they've done. Yep. It gives you an insight, helps you to sort of shape. And I always believe you take something out of everything, right? And
yeah, true.
I mean, I obviously do what I do because I love people's stories. I love it from a recruitment side. I love it from a business side, but I also love it from this side, hence why we do this, to actually interview and find out the different fantastic stories in the industry, because no one has the same story and no one has the same journey as well. And I think that's really important as people are emerging in their careers as well, to sort of understand that and understand the different stages and understand you don't necessarily, this is a fantastic, as you said, it's a hard industry. It is an industry, a bit like nursing. It's tough and you got to work really hard, and it can be long hours sometimes. It can be a lot of stress, and, you know, you don't get paid very well as designers in the industry versus others, but it's what you do because you're passionate about it. You love it. And you get to leave something. You know, what I do is fantastic, but I don't get to look at something that I get to leave and actually see that. So you do get that fantastic reward as designers as well, and having that tangible element and knowing you're making a difference to people's lives on a daily basis.
Yeah. And I think that's what I say is, like, if there's any takeout is, you know, be a part of something that's memorable. Like, you may not be the one thing, but be part of something that could be a legacy. Be part of something that can be memorable. And if you're part of that, gee, you did okay. You know what I mean? Like, that's something. I mean, I downplay it a little bit, but it is something. And that's special. So, yeah.
And I like that too, your line around, you know, failure was not an option. As well. And I think particularly as a business person and starting business and running a business for 17 years, you know, 90% of businesses fail within the first 5 years. It's tough, and there's lots of learnings. And I'm sure during those 17 years, there's lots of evolutions and changes. And as you've gone on to the next evolution within that as well. Delightful, Julie. Thank you so much for sharing all of your story.
A pleasure.
That's absolutely fantastic. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.